It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I have a wonderful memory of canoeing with my oldest son when he was just 7 years old on the Swan Lake canoe route. It was the first real backcountry trip I'd taken him on, and I wasn't sure how it would go, but it was perfect. And 15 years later, we're still exploring together. These routes allow you to get away from the car, away from formal campgrounds, and into beautiful country, but without a lot of risk or hardship. And the area is beautiful this time of year, and it's not too late to go. So today we're talking about the Kenai Canoe Routes, the Swan Lake Canoe Route, the Swanson River Canoe Route, and floating the Swanson River. And I have three guests all on the phone with me who are experienced in running these routes or setting up a trip. Candace Ward is with us. She's a ranger with the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. We welcome Candace.
I'm glad to be here.
Max Finch is the owner of Alaska Canoe and Campground. That's that business at the corner of Swanson River Road and the Sterling Highway in Sterling, where you can rent canoes and a lot of the equipment you need. Thanks for being with us, Max.
Thank you.
And Mike Pawlowski is traveling. He's a canoeist who spends a lot of time in his canoe and has done these routes a number of times. Thanks for being with us, Mike.
Thank you, Paul.
So what is the special attraction of this area for you, Mike? What is it you particularly enjoy about Swan Lake and Swanson River routes?
I think it's what you said at the beginning. It's the ease of getting into the backcountry and sort of getting away from the car without a lot of the risk and danger you can get in some more remote trips. I feel it's really accessible to get into some just gorgeous country.
Yeah, and you kind of get off by yourself. There'd be other people there, but it has never felt crowded to me anyway.
No, never. And especially this time of year when the bugs start to die off, it can just be an incredible place to spend a long amount of time back there.
Uh-huh. So do you normally just drive down the starting point is there in Sterling, so maybe a 3-hour drive from Anchorage. Do you just drive down for a weekend to paddle around there?
I've done short trips like a weekend, but I usually try and do 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I typically drive down with friends, and I'll put in at the west entrance on the Swan Lake and leave a car in Sterling out around the Moose River Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll go in the west entrance, play around, try and get to the central part of the Swan Lake system, and then take the Moose River out.
All right, and then you find yourself right there back at the Sterling Highway at the confluence of the Kenai River and the Moose River.
Yeah, the Isaac Walton Campground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice spot.
Oh, it's a gorgeous little spot off the side of the road.
Yeah. So, Candace, how many? It's quite a system. There are a lot of little lakes that are connected mostly by short portages. How large is the whole system there in the wildlife refuge for canoeing?
Well, there's a lot of ways to describe it, but one way might be to look at each system. With the Swan Lake system, there are two loops. One is approximately 15 miles, the other's 20, depending upon how you route it and circulate it. And then when you connect with the Moose River, you know, that's approximately 12 miles or so. And so people can plan how they want to go in based on how they want to do the portages, because the portages go everywhere from just a short distance upwards to a mile. So that can make a difference how people plan. And then the Swan Lake system, it's also got two different loops. One is fairly remote that people don't often do, and that's a 10-mile loop that's kind of way off at the edge on the western side. But the other loop's around 20 miles, and then if they go in kind of a tough portage getting from Jean Lake to the Swanson River, and then if you did the whole Swanson River, that's a little over 45 miles to come out at Captain Cook. So lots of different ways to plan trips, from short ones to long ones, and that's a quick overview.
Yeah. Well, my experience is that it's very easy to look at the map, and we've got a map on our website at alaskapublic.org from the refuge. You can click through and look at these all these little lakes that are connected by these portages. It's very easy to look at that and get overly ambitious as to what you've accomplished, especially if you're with kids, because those portages, I mean, the lake canoeing part obviously is easy, but the portages are not necessarily easy.
Well, and, you know, when I look at distances, you know, I don't absolutely have every portage straightened out, you know, so they can be longer than they may look on the map, for one thing. And also, depending on the weight of the canoe, it can really make a difference for the portaging. So those are all factors.
Yeah, yeah.
And time frame.
So can people come into the refuge there and sort of get advice on planning a trip and figuring out, well, how far can we really go and what are the best choices for us?
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah, and tell us how to find the refuge visitor center, what your hours are.
Our visitor center is located, we're just a mile from Soldotna. And so if you're coming through Soldotna, as soon as you cross the Kenai River, you get into the left-hand turn lane, and you make a turn, and you're just a little bit onto Funny River Road. And then immediate right, you're going up a gravel road for a mile, and you get to our visitor center. We're just a bit tucked back from town. And we're open during the period of time from fall through spring, is Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30, and Saturdays from 10 to 5. And then in the summertime, we add that we're here on Sundays. We're here 12 to 5 on Sundays in the summertime.
Uh-huh. And you know, for Anchorage residents who are driving down to the peninsula, or for our Kodiak listeners, if they're driving up to Anchorage, the Refuge Visitor Center is a good place to stop. It's just an interesting place to check out if you've never done it. I'll bet a lot of people have just driven on by and haven't pulled off. It's sort of right there behind Spinard Builder Supply.
And a lot of that is as the highway's gotten busier and more businesses, it's harder to see the signs. Mm-hmm. And so we are a little bit tucked back, but we're a great spot to visit the visitor center and just to get out. And we've got some trail loops here to stretch your legs. If you want to go on a 15-minute walk or if you want to go on a 2-hour walk, there's some options to be able to break up the trip.
Yeah. Well, now I want to talk to my other guest, Max Finch. Max is the owner of Alaska Canoe and Campground, which is right there sort of at the threshold of the canoe routes. And Max, you sort of have become the main outfitter who supplies folks with the gear they need. And what sort of stuff do you have there to support somebody who wants to take a multi-day canoe trip?
Well, yeah, we started in like 1991, just kind of happenstance because of our location and because I enjoyed canoeing myself out there. So over the years, we've just kind of, I guess, built the business around the needs of the traveler or the person that wanted to go in the system.
Mm-hmm. So you rent canoes, and what kind of canoes do you rent? And sort of, and do you do drop-off too, or do folks need to tie the canoe on their own car when they rent it?
Well, yeah, we do all the shuttle work that anybody wants. We're happy to help anybody get out there in the system. And, you know, our policy here at our business is that we don't say no. So if somebody has an idea that they want to do, we try to figure out how to make it happen. And whether it be, you know, doing different types of shuttles or tying the canoe on their car or whatever, we'll make it happen. You know, we have a lot of people from Europe and different places that come that are on kind of limited budgets, and we thought over the years it's been a kind of a great opportunity to help people to get out there and do the trip for a real inexpensively way of seeing Alaska. You know, renting a canoe and tying it on your car and taking it is really inexpensive and works out to like $12, $13 a day per person for all the gear. So,
I first met Max when I was writing travel guidebooks because I realized that for visitors coming to Alaska, they may think that to get outdoors and be in the backcountry safely, they have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars for a guide. But here's a place where you can go. You don't need a guide, and you can actually rent the equipment you need quite cheaply. You don't need to bring it from Anchorage, and away you go. And And so I guess you probably introduced a lot of people to the backcountry just through that kind of opportunity.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun, and you know, we, like you said, we got some people that came through over the years that have been writers and different ones that been basically our main advertisement is just the word of mouth and the publications that writers like yourself did over the years. And with, I guess, Fromers and then Lonely Planet, you know, they kind of sneak in and do a trip and determine whether you're worthy or not, you know.
Right, yeah. And do you you rent the canoes, obviously life jackets, any other camping equipment that folks can rent there?
Yeah, we do a full service. You know, we, old Dan Quick, that wrote the original Canoe Trails book, you know, it's over 20 years ago, he called it the other Boundary Waters. That's what he kind of nicknamed the Canoe Trails, and that's kind of the way it is, except that we don't have the large outfitters or the huge amounts of people that really go back in there. And so outfitting people in Canoe Trails is a little different than it would be like in the Boundary Waters, where you go and they'll give you all your meals and everything. Now, we have done that on occasion for scout groups and anybody that asks, but we supply every type of camping equipment that anybody would need. So if a person, you know, it's real difficult now to carry a stove, a fuel stove on an airplane or transport it anywhere. So we have stoves, different varieties, you know, everything from the white gas style to the high-tech propanes and butanes and whatnot. So we have all the different types of stoves that people can be comfortable with. Sleeping pads, sleeping bags, water purification kits, you know, just anything anybody would need to go out there into the system that they didn't want to carry down with them, or they don't own. You know, it's fairly inexpensive to do it that way.
Yeah, yeah. So somebody who is coming from Anchorage or from Kodiak or whatever can get most of what they need there, and then you can drop them off and pick them up, and they can do a loop and so, that kind of thing. And we're going to talk more about that. I want to let everybody know that the show is Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Wolforth. We're talking about the Kenai Canoe Routes, the Swan Lake Canoe Route, Swanson River Canoe Route, and then also the Swanson River itself, which are all within Kenai National Wildlife Refuge and are all within really easy reach for a weekend or for a longer trip from Anchorage or anywhere in the South Central region. And really one of these opportunities that is kind of world class that we may not really think about that much for just a quick chance to get out of town and into the backcountry. So the what it is essentially is a lot of lakes that kind of pockmark this flat area of the Kenai Peninsula, and the lakes are all linked by trails and boardwalks. So you can paddle the first lake and then take your stuff out and walk to the next and paddle the next lake and go lake after lake after lake and just feel like you are descending deep into the backcountry, and yet, you know, not that difficult, not that, not like backpacking where you have to carry everything on your back all the time. And I have three guests with me today. We were just hearing from Max Finch, who is with Alaska Canoe and Campground. He outfits trips out there. Candace Ward is a park ranger with the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, and Mike Palowski is a canoeist who goes down and enjoys the routes and spend some time out there. And Mike, I'm interested in how Max brought up the name of Daniel Quick, who wrote this great guidebook called Kenai Canoe Trails. And we were talking about how you had used that book and bought a number of copies of it over the years. Is that how you originally found out about these routes and got interested in them?
Yeah, it was actually back in college when I was going to Alaska Pacific and was wandering around Tidal Wave and found that book and then started reading it, you know, bought a copy, started reading it and planned my first trip out there and just fell in love with it. But the book is an incredible guide for anybody looking at what you can do in the area. And he just did a great job researching and putting in the maps and the types of fish and what to look for in the area and really the campsites.
And it's gotten a little bit old, but it sounds like it's still probably the best book out there.
I've always found it to be the best, and I've always found that you need to be really careful with what type of Ziploc bags you put it in, because I've just got them wet and ruined on too many trips, and I'm just happy to go buy another one.
Yeah, and I think it's a self-published book. Daniel Quick is, a Soldotna resident or Stirling, and it just produced this extremely detailed book. And I assume you probably sell it there at the Visitor Center, right, Candace?
Yes, we do, and when Dan was working on the book, he connected with us at the Refuge, and you certainly saw the incredible dedication to research that he did and all the aspects of putting it together. So I still think it is the one and only major resource about the canoe trail system that's in print.
Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do this, you need it would be great to have Daniel Quick's book, or you at least need a detailed map to find your way. Let's talk about some other stuff that are essentials, and any of you can jump in. You obviously need a canoe. What kind of canoe do you use, Mike?
I typically have a large 16-foot if I'm with a big group, because I like to put a lot of the gear in the base of that when we get on to either the Swanson or the Moose River. And then you try and keep it to, I think, as light as you can, 14-foot explorers or something light enough to portage easily.
Mm-hmm. And the new canoes are pretty light, these Kevlar canoes, but they're quite expensive as well. How much, I don't know, any of you can jump in, but and Max, I'm also interested in what sort of canoes you're renting, but you're going to be carrying the canoe quite a bit, so you don't want necessarily to have the heaviest canoe out there.
Right. Yeah, the Royal X canoe, which is a brand of material, is probably the most versatile type that there is. And you spoke of Kevlar, but Royal X provides you a durable canoe that's fairly lightweight. So I can send out a 16-foot canoe, like Mike was talking about, that weighs about 58 to 62 pounds and has a portage yoke on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not too bad, if a guy carries a canoe for a couple hundred yards and sets it down and then goes back and gets his gear and brings it to the canoe and then kind of leapfrogs his gear through the portage, and changes up his muscles. A 60-pound canoe isn't too bad. I do have some Kevlar canoes, but I just don't like them going down anywhere where there's rocks. They don't do good on the Swanson River or even on the Moose River because of the rocks.
And so, how so? Because they just get beat up?
Right. Kevlar's
yes.
A light.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
I have both a Kevlar and a Royal X in our family, and if I'm just going in, like for day trips or staying on the lakes, we take the Kevlar, but if we're going to go on either the Moose or the Swanson, we take the Royal X boat. So I concur with Max.
Durability being basically the issue.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you hit a rock, you don't want to have to be doing a major repair down the way, and the Royal X boats take it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And as long as we're on this issue of weight and portaging, how do you guys carry your gear when you're going on those portages? I mean, will you... there's a number of different ways of doing it, but Mike, do you want to start? How do you, when you're portaging, either with a partner or by yourself, how do you carry your other gear besides the canoe?
I've really gotten to like the dry bags that have essentially backpack straps on them. As those have evolved over the years, they've gotten really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so just because you're in and out of the water so much, I like to keep my stuff in dry bags. And if it's just me, usually I'll just carry while I portage. But the more people we get, the gear tends to proliferate, and then we'll just casually portage the canoes once, come back, grab gear, and take those the next time, or just swap canoes and gear off of people. But mm-hmm. Typically any type of backpack, years ago we used to just put it in trash compactor bags, all our gear, and then throw it in a backpack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the heavy duty dry bags that are available now that actually have straps on them, and and there's a wide variety of them available.
And they've really come down in price over the last several years to be pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm. 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 Do you carry those Macs? Do you carry the dry bags as well for people who are sort of trying it out and don't want to buy it?
Right. Yeah, I got like you said, all the different varieties. And you know, 20 years ago, I was spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars on those backpack dry bags. The same bag now, it's actually even a better quality. It's just very, very reasonable. I mean, for $75 you can get a very good sized dry bag that has backpack straps on it that will carry your sleeping bag and all of your clothing and gear like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't talked too much about floating the Swanson River, and I want to get into that. For people who don't know the geography, you drive most of the way through Sterling. On the right-hand side of the road is Swanson River Road, and take that out. And there are a number of put-in points along the road to go into different lakes, but there's also a spot where you can put in straight into the Swanson River. Candace, can you tell us a little bit about that? And when you come out at the other end, it's the Captain Cook State Recreation Area, which is up north of Nikiski, which is a pretty long drive. So you need to go out there and pre-position a car at the other end. What's that Swanson River float like?
Well, you know, I may actually pass this one over to one of the other people. I've only been on it once, but I did really enjoy it. But it was a fall period of time with real high water, and we did it all in one day, and it kind of went by me in a blur. And if I would like to go back someday, stop and really camp and spend a little more time. So I may pass this one over to Mike or Max.
Yeah, Mike, do you want to take that? Have you done the float, the Swanson River?
I am in kind of a similar position. I did the Swanson years ago, and it was, we actually had an opposite problem. We had really low water. And I remember it being really, really pretty, but a lot rockier than the Moose. And it just reminded me of how careful we were with our canoe trying to go down it. It wasn't overly difficult, so I don't want anybody to think that. It was just a really, really pretty creek.
Yeah. But now, the Moose is more of a muddy, slow-moving river, and the Swanson, is, as I understand, is a little bit quicker, but not so quick as to be threatening to anybody.
Oh, no, not at all. Mm-hmm. But you still always want to be careful. But I do remember that the camping, the availability of sites along the Swanson was really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, throughout the whole refuge, there's great campsites, but I remember a few that we saw along the Swanson in the same place I wanted to go back and check out.
Yeah. And Max, I think, you know, the Swanson is a good, for somebody who's really never done a river float, it's kind of a scary thing to do the first time. And the Swanson is pretty safe. You know, you learn some of the skills floating the Swanson River. Would you agree with that?
I do. And one of the features of the Swanson is that you can stand up in it. You know.
Right. Yeah, you flip the canoe, you just stand up. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a neat thing about the Swanson is that's 13 hours of real paddle time. So some people say 24. I've heard as much as 27 miles per river. I guess it depends on how you take the turns, but I tell people you're going to spend 13 hours of real paddling time. Now, we've done it in 9 in kayaks. But, you know, if you're going to enjoy the trip, I'm going to tell you, 2 miles an hour, so 13 hours of paddling time. So you want to watch your clock, and that will kind of help you determine on how you're going to get out. Now, the river, like you said, is very placid, very nice, very, very easy. But it has these very dark rocks in it. I mean, they are just black. And you won't see them, and you'll just run your boat right up on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many people have tipped the canoe over just by just suddenly find themselves up on top of a rock.
Right.
And so, fortunately, like I said, the river, you can usually stand up in it. So it's very, very smooth and nice river, except when you get down towards the bottom. And then it's so stony that it's hard to get your canoe between the different rocks when the water picks up as it nears Captain Cook.
Mm-hmm.
And a few people have problems down there. That's kind of the only real problem area is right down the last few miles before they get down to Captain Cook. It picks up a little bit of speed, and the rocks kind of get a little bit close, And if they can't figure out how to get between them very good, they're going to tip over. So dry bags, absolutely, or garbage bags if your stuff tied up tight, and have them tied to the canoe because they will end up down the river.
Right.
Yep.
So, but you could, if you wanted to do a paddle down the Swanson, you could really take off a Saturday morning, get in the water, you know, from Anchorage, get in the water by noon, quit for dinner, camp out overnight, then finish the rest of it on Sunday morning and be back in Anchorage by Sunday evening for the kids to finish their homework and get to school on Monday morning. It's not impossible to go down there and just do it as a one-nighter, and just to kind of have a wilderness experience, fast version. Would you agree with that, Max? Go ahead.
The thing that's neat about the Swanson, too, is there's so much wildlife on it. I mean, that's where you're going to see a moose. You really are. You're going to find a moose standing in the river. You're going to have a chance to see river otter, muskrat, beaver, osprey, eagles, lots of waterfowl, and the fishing is just outstanding. I mean, there's really a nice trout stream, and it supports a nice run of silvers in the fall. It does have sockeye and some kings that come in the river, but it does have a decent run of salmon, and it's a very rich river, and the trout fishing is just outstanding.
Yeah, I want to get more into the fishing aspect in the second half. Mike, did you have a last comment on that before we go to the break?
Thanks for inspiring what I think I'm going to do this weekend.
All right, great. Well, that's our objective. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the Swanson River canoe route, the Swan Lake canoe route, and three guests with us, Mike Pawlowski. It sounds like he'll be canoeing this weekend. Max Finch with the Alaska Canoe and Campground. He's an outfitter right there at the threshold to the roots, and Candace Ward, park ranger with Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. We're going to be back after the break, but now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer calendar. Celebrate the completion of the Coastal Trail Rehabilitation Project in Anchorage at a costumed affair. The Coastal Trail Costume Parade and Celebration will begin at 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, September 26th. Dress up and meet at Elderberry Park to walk, run, or ride with your community on the new Coastal Trail on Thursday, September 26th at 5:30 p.m. I know I have really been enjoying that new smooth asphalt, which is still beyond the sewage plant out to Kincaid is still under construction, but the part that's farther into town is looking great. Coming up on Saturday, October 5th, the Eagle River Nature Center will host a guided hike to Rabbit Lake in Anchorage. Join volunteers Bob and Ann Fisher for a 9-mile round trip to stunning Rabbit Lake. The hike involves a 1,400-foot elevation gain. Hikers should be in good shape and have completed a similar hike. Space is limited, so contact the Eagle River Nature Center to reserve your spot, or go to ernc.org. Also coming up in Girdwood, the Star Watchers will hold their orientation meeting at the Girdwood School on Wednesday, October 9th at 7 p.m. Subsequent meetings will be held via phone tree, depending on clear skies. Join the Star Watchers to view the winter sky with your friends on clear nights. Binoculars and telescopes are helpful, but not necessary. It's a good idea to bring them to orientation meeting on October 9th. For more info, call John at 783-2308. Finally, Saturday, September 28th, is the 20th anniversary of National Public Lands Day, followed by an open house at the Campbell Creek Science Center in Anchorage. To tell us a little bit more about the events happening at the Science Center, we have Jeff Bruni with us by phone. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Charles. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. So tell us, what is National Public Lands Day?
Well, it's actually a day to celebrate public lands. It's happening across the country. It's also a day to give back by helping out with volunteer work projects in the morning, and then in the afternoon at our open house to have fun celebrating the outdoors. So we're inviting people to come out to the Campbell Creek Science Center. That's located at 68th Avenue and Elmore Road. Saturday, September 28th. And basically, it's two parts. We'll have volunteer work projects in the morning, and then in the afternoon, open house. We'll have lots of fun activities so people can come lend a hand in the morning to do a variety of trail projects, or they can just come for the afternoon open house, or if they want to do both, that would be great. It's all free and open to the public. The theme this year is Let's Move Outside. This is a national effort to promote exercise in the great outdoors. So if people want to come to volunteer in the morning, they can show up at the Camel Creek Science Center. Again, that's 68th Avenue and Elmore Road.
Mm-hmm. And what time should they be there if they want to help work?
8:30 would be good. Between 8:30 and 9, we have our volunteer registration.
Do folks need to bring any, I mean, I guess they should probably be wearing work gloves and boots and stuff, right?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Warm clothes, boots, and gloves, and then we'll provide the other safety equipment. And then they can choose from a variety of trail projects, spreading new gravel on trails. We're going to install a bear-resistant trash can, another one at the Science Center parking lot. There's revegetation projects, replacing fence posts, gardening, installing a drain in our amphitheater, painting, litter pickup. Basically, the things we need to do with the community to take care of the Bureau of Land Management Campbell Tract. That's the 730-acre parcel of public land that you and I and all of our listeners are own.
So, yeah, which is used by a lot of folks who live in the area, but then also used all winter long by a lot of school kids and groups that come out to learn about the outdoors, right?
Absolutely, through our school programs, our free public events as well. For those interested, we'll also have a free pizza lunch and door prizes provided by the Friends of the Camel Creek Science Center, and this is for all of the volunteers. That'll be at 12:30. And then we will launch into our open house, mm-hmm. and that's from 1:30 to 4:30, again, at the Science Center.
So what sort of activities are you having at the open house?
Well, a variety of outdoor stations, live music, refreshments, activities for the whole family, provided not only by the Science Center staff, but by our partners. So Alaska Pacific University will be here to do a station on slack lining. I've never tried that before, but apparently you can walk on this narrow piece of webbing strung between two anchor points, and I guess some people can even do tricks on them. We'll have disc golf so people can try out their aim. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game will have a station on archery and hunting safety. Geocache Alaska will offer geocaching, and that's, as you know, when you use GPS units to hide and seek out little containers mm-hmm. hidden in the woods. REI will be here with fat tire bikes to give tips on winter biking, because we all know and are very excited about snow coming around the corner. And the Science Center staff will offer stations on birding, nature exploration, and outdoor safety and survival. We'll even have a station for new parents and their infants and toddlers. This is called Moms, Pops, and Tots. And so what we try to do there is encourage new parents to work with their kids in a safe way to enjoy the outdoors at the very beginning. Best Beginnings, they're loaning us this really cool activity called Stretch, and little kids and parents can follow a story on signs through the woods. It's really magical, and then they stretch and exercise just like the main character does in the book.
Fantastic. So this is all happening on Saturday the 28th. You can be there in the morning to help out, do some work. I think that's what you should do, really. You should be there at 8:30 and help and work out. Then lunch
for that plug.
Yeah, then lunch for the volunteers, and then a lot of fun activities for the family and everybody in the afternoon. And you can find out more about National Public Lands Day at the Campbell Creek Science Center on our website at alaskapublic.org. And Jeff Bruni from the Campbell Creek Science Center, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to welcoming everyone.
All right, great. Stay with us for the second half of the show. We'll be back talking more about canoeing in the Swan Lake Canoe Route, Swanson River Canoe Route, when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on future programs and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and we're talking today about canoeing. Canoeing on the Kenai Peninsula, where we have a world-class set of canoe routes and rivers that are our own little secret, and are really easy to get to, really easy to get outfitted for, and you can do just on a weekend, or if you have more time, you can do a real expedition right in our back door. We welcome our listeners from KMXT and Kodiak as well. No reason you guys can't come up and do it too, or maybe just get inspired about canoeing down in Kodiak by listening to it. I know I'm getting excited about doing it. We have three guests with us today. Mike Pawlowski is a canoeist from Anchorage. Max Finch owns Alaska Canoe and Campground in Sterling, which outfits folks for basically anything they need to do a trip in the canoe routes. And Candace Ward, park ranger with the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. And I wanted to ask all of you, but we'll start with Candace, about fishing. I remember the pleasure the first time that I went down there with my son, who was young at the time, and I was paddling along, and he was trailing a line and catching this little tiny fish, and then you finally get one that's big enough to eat and just sort of pull up on the shore, make a campfire, fry it up in the pan, and eat it. And I think that he had one of the most memorable and affecting experiences of fishing is to do that. Are those fish stocked, Candace, or what are they doing there?
No, they aren't stocked. They are native fish, and generally in the springtime, sometimes people get Arctic char in some of the lakes, but for the most part, it's rainbow trout, and that's the major thing that's going to be taken. And as Max described, the Swanson River itself does have a run of silver salmon that people enjoy fishing during, August and September. So there's that as well.
And silver should be running now. And do you guys know if the silver fishing is good right now on the Swanson?
I've never fished this late. Mm-hmm. I've usually fished the latest the week before this. Mm-hmm. And gotten, I wouldn't say they were perfectly silvery, but, just a tiny blush still, if you ate them right away, good. I'll defer to anybody else who might have gone later.
Max?
Yeah, that's an early run. That's what's nice about that Swanson River. That's kind of our first silvers up on this end of the peninsula that we can get a hold of, and they're pretty well played out this time of year, although, like Candace says, there's plenty of them in the river, but they're kind of brilliant colors right now.
Yeah. Now, Max, you were saying that it's a good time for lake fishing because the cooler water and the fish are pretty active this time of year.
Right, yeah. As the water starts to cool, those fish just really get excited about ponying up on the food. And And then, of course, at the very first breakup in the spring, as soon as that ice is off the lakes, is probably the premier time. But right now is really good. I mean, you can catch those fish in different water levels throughout the system once you kind of find what where they like it. And they're very, very active and real hungry.
Yeah. Mike, are you a fisherman?
Oh, avid.
So do you combine fishing and canoeing when you're out there?
Absolutely. And that's why I like to stay for a while.
Uh-huh.
It really lets you work the lakes out there.
So what's the...
And Max is right. This time of year is incredible.
And what is it? Do you look for a deep spot, or how do you... What sort of... Give us some tips about how you do canoe lake fishing in that area for success.
I typically look for structure or prominent points. So if a lake has a bend in it that creates a little bay, you want to troll and just look for areas like that, run across it and see where you find them, and then once you find them, try and replicate it and key back in on it. So I usually start off trolling, and then once we discover them, focus and start doing loops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're going after rainbows primarily?
Yeah, primarily rainbows.
And what would you use?
I'll typically troll a leech pattern off a fly rod or a small, like a crocodile, anything silver and flashy.
Okay. And what level of success do you normally have? I suppose it's probably different in each lake. Do you go for the larger lakes? Are they more likely to be successful?
I didn't ever find it's the larger lakes necessarily, but it's the more willing you are to get back into the system, it gets better and better and better the further back into the system you're willing to go.
I see. So don't worry about it until you've done a few portages and gotten off those front lakes.
Exactly. That tends to be what I think.
Mm-hmm. Max, do you agree with that? Do you have any other tips you'd add to that?
Yeah, I think Mike said the leeches, and let me tell you that's the main food source for a lot of those fish out there, and it's worked really, really well. You can cast leeches with a fly rod into those weed beds too, and along the edges where you find structure, like Mike was saying. One thing that's nice about Dan Quick's book is that in those pictures, he gives the depth, the location and the depths of those lakes, so that you kind of know where the deeper holes are. You're trying to fish in the summertime and it's getting really hot and you're having a hard time finding fish, you can find the deeper water, where the shallower points are. So he's got those kind of marked out on the map on each lake.
Right, and Max is referring to this book, Kenai Canoe Routes, by Daniel L. Quick, which is available at the Refuge Visitor Center down in Sterling, and we have a link to it on our website as well. A remarkably complete guidebook, and tried to get Mr. Quick for today's show, but I wasn't able to reach him. We're just sending out compliments to him on doing a terrific book, which has a lot of details, which I suspect may not totally be accurate anymore because things do change, but most of the information is still accurate. The other thing I'm wondering about is bird watching. And Candace, are the birds mostly gone, or do we still have some migratory birds going through for good bird watching this time of year?
Well, you know, you should have a variety. You could have swan families going through. Some of the lakes are nesting areas for swans in the summer, and the swans are fairly protective, but now that they are in flight with their young, they move through a lot of lakes. You have loons.
Would you be talking about trumpeter swans or what?
Yes, trumpeter swans. Trumpeter swans. Mm-hmm. And also grebes nest in the springtime. This time of year, you could have different waterfowl coming through, anything, you know, from scoters to mallards to a variety. I always think it's a great birdwatching area because you can be quiet. And in the spring, summertime, if there's birds out there nesting in their broods, you can keep a distance. If you've got, you know, loons with their chicks, you can keep a distance and really watch what's going on because you're, you know, in a boat, you're not high profile. It's a great spot to be bird watching or wildlife watching because mm-hmm. being in that boat, you're lower and you can be quiet.
And there's no motorized use there at all. Is that correct?
What was that?
No motorized activity there? I mean, there's no...
Right, yeah. Right. It's all muscle-powered.
Right, and so that keeps the birds from being intimidated, scared off, or hit by wakes and all that.
True.
So we're talking about the Swan Lake and Swanson River canoe routes near Sterling in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. The show is Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and we have three guests with us today. Candace Ward, you were just hearing from, is a park ranger at the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. Max Finch, with Alaska Canoe and Campground, is an outfitter there in Sterling. And Mike Palowski is an avid canoeist and fisherman. We should get into safety, since we're sort of encouraging beginners to get out there and give this a try. What are some of the key safety things that people should be aware of? And maybe I'll start with you, Candace. Obviously, life jackets, PFDs, should be worn all the time. The water is cold all the time. And if you fall in, it's a serious, and you need to be prepared to get to shore and dry out and warm up. So do you have any advice that you give folks who are going out the first time and things that they really need to be aware of?
Well, we always encourage life jackets. That's very important. I also like to talk to people about, depending on the weather situation, it's always a good idea to have layered clothing so that you can take off layers if you get hot and put on layers when you're getting colder. Usually there's some point of getting cold, even in the summertime, depending on, you know, what's going on with rain or wind or that sort of situation. So you definitely want to think about that. I also try to encourage people to think about with water purification when they're out there, because they shouldn't be drinking surface water without treating it. And I try to encourage them as they go in to think about taking quite a few quarts of water right away, so that whilst they're going out the first day before they get to camp, they have sufficient water. And I like to have them think about everything from when they're getting into camp, how they have fires, to be safe and careful about that, and also regarding bears out in that area. So there's a lot of different tips depending on, you know, whether somebody's a day tripper or going out with a family.
Mm-hmm. Is there cell phone coverage back there?
It's pretty good in a lot of areas. So that is also a nice safety feature to take with you.
Yeah. So, Max, I'm sure that you, although we've emphasized that this is a good beginner area, I'm sure you've run into some beginners who've gotten into some problems over the years. What kinds of problems have you seen when people have gotten maybe a little over their heads?
Well, the first thing that happens is that a lot of people are afraid of canoes because they think they're tippy, and they can be. And kind of to mirror what Candace said, I try to give all of my customers a little instruction on how to be able to never tip a canoe over, because once you get wet, then you have to deal with all those other factors. So, when I've got a person that's going to go out in the canoe trail system, no matter if they tell me they've been paddling all their life or whatnot, I give them some instruction on how to keep that canoe from ever tipping over. And a lot of times I'll get out at the first lake, and I'll take them down to the first lake they're going to go in, and I'll get in the canoe, and I'm going to say, I'm going to completely fill this canoe full of water and not tip it over. And they're looking at me like, what? And so I show them that how I hold my head exactly 90 degrees from the water. So it's kind of like you riding a bicycle and you're pedaling along. Your body's moving all over the place as you throw the bicycle back and forth, but your head is dead center in the middle. And in a canoe, it's the same thing, or a kayak, or if you're skiing, if you're on a skateboard, unless you're using centrifugal force, your head has to be at 90 degrees from the water.
Mm-hmm.
So you can move your body back and forth just like you do on a bicycle or when you're skiing, but if your head stays 90 degrees, you can't tip that canoe over. It's almost impossible.
Got you. Yeah. So knowing something about canoeing, or at least getting comfortable in a canoe and taking it easy at first and learning that balancing. Do people ever need to be rescued out there, or is that folks who get hypothermia or that sort of thing come up at all?
Yes,
it happens occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Max, were you going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, we've had people have had heart attacks. We had a fellow a few years ago sustain a back injury on his portage between Swan Lake and the Moose River, and they ended up having a helicopter go out and get him. But we have had a heart attack out there that we've had to have rescued. And cell service was saving grace there. We were able to get cell service. So.
Yeah, of course, that could happen in downtown street in Anchorage. So, Mike, do you have any tips on safety or safety gear that you like to carry?
Yeah, I thought Max talked about something earlier that we all learn, and that's to be sure to tie your gear to the canoe so that if you do roll it over, you still have access to your gear. As we've all lost things as we flip a canoe over the years, and I just think that one's really important, especially as you're portaging so much, to take the time to actually resecure everything to the canoe before you go back in the water. And then the other one is pay attention to your footwear. You want to be dry, but you also, a lot of times, your waterproof boots, like your hip boots or your extra toughs, don't have the best ankle support. And when you're carrying a canoe, you just want to take it slow as you're going through the portages.
Right. Yeah, good point. and I would just add, just following up on what you're saying, Mike, is that it's very easy to get lazy and leave stuff loose in the canoe. And you can even, if you're carrying the canoe upright, you can even leave it in there while you're going across the portage. And then if you flip, all this stuff is going to be lost, your sunglasses or whatever, you know, that the stuff that's loose. And so consolidating everything back into the dry bag, when you take something out, use it, put it back, is a tip that I've found is really, really helpful and something avoids problems. So, I just want to throw in here, I had the pleasure of interviewing a guy yesterday, Bob Volhaber, who you can find out about on alaskapublic.org. He was also interviewed on Alaska News Nightly. I interviewed him for an hour, and we're going to be airing that interview in October, I think October 24th. And Bob did the most amazing canoe trip. He started in Washington, Orcas Island, Washington, canoed the entire inside passage, went over the Chilkoot Pass with his canoe, went down the Yukon, went out to the Bering Sea, up the Kvijak River, across Lake Iliamna, and came back up Cook Inlet and ended up here in Anchorage on the Coastal Trail in 5 months. An amazing feat. And that's going to be a great interview, which I really recommend people listen in on. We'll make sure there's a link on today's show at alaskapublic.org. That's sort of the other end. That's sort of the total other end of expertise. But, you know, Bob started out just canoeing around Minnesota, and a lot of the stuff he did, he was doing for the first time. And you have to do everything for the first time at least once. We've got just a couple of minutes left, but I want to make sure to talk a little bit about the land itself and how the roots came into being and how things have changed there. Because I know there's been some drying up of land on the Kenai Peninsula as we've had warmer weather with climate change, and I know there's been work done to improve some of the portages. Candace, how did these roots originally come into existence?
Well, our refuge manager in 1963, Will Troyer, and we were called the Moose Range then before we became Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. And he was a pilot, so he saw these lakes from the air. And once Swanson River Road and Swan Lake Roads had been created mostly for oil exploration on the refuge, he thought it would just be a wonderful opportunity for people to get out on the lakes if a canoe route was created. And so the first effort was actually in the winter of 1964, and the loop on the Swan Lake route from the west entrance was created to go over to the east entrance. And then subsequently, each winter for 3 winters, work was done in the wintertime, clearing. And at that time, the area was kind of shrubby because it had experienced fire and the shrubs that came back. And so they did quite a bit of, you know, work with handsaws and Pulaskis and that sort of thing. And some other folks that helped out were Abe Thayer and Bob Ritchie.
And I know
so it was
Will.
A small
Will.
Little group that, yeah. that worked with it.
And Will is still, I think Will still lives there in Cooper Landing. I know his son really well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes, he does. And so, you know, these folks, and Bob Ritchie's still in our community. I don't know about Abe, but they're, you know, just a couple people working at the refuge saying, you know, this would be a really cool opportunity. And then they took their families out. They'd go out in the summertime and experience it, and other friends would join in. And so they had their first seasonal crew working in summers on the Swan Lake system in the summer of 1965. And since that time, We've had trail crews and Youth Conservation Corps crews working to improve the system, and especially the portages, because they have challenges.
Yeah, they get very muddy, and I think you've been boardwalking some more of them, right?
Yes, and in some places we've even had projects where big stones were brought in and buckets of gravel to work on areas that kind of were these bottomless pits where, you know, dug down, put in big stones, put in gravel to try to help areas as well. So it's been a combination of different efforts, but all handwork.
I'd be interested in all three of you, how you've, changes you've seen there. Have you seen have the lakes grown shallower, or has the canoeing changed at all over the years? Max?
Well, yeah, that east entrance, that one lake out there, I can't even think of the name of it right off the top of my head, has really got a lot less water in it now than 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, most of the lakes are holding their level pretty good. I think Dan's book is not that dated, because changes really haven't been that much more, other than the trees have grown up a lot since, of course, the fires back in the 40s and 50s and 60s that were out there. There's a lot bigger trees than there were, you know, even 30 years ago. But
well, I want to give Candace and Mike a chance on that one. Mike, have you observed any change over the years?
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing Max said. The east route on the Swan Lakes has gotten a bit shallower, but also the lower part of the Moose River, I've noticed over the years, has gotten, I'm not sure it's shallower, it's more weedier, and that slows you down a little bit.
Yeah, that slows it. You're not scraping bottom, but you got to push through a little bit more.
You got to push through a little bit more. Exactly.
Candace, has the refuge noticed changes due to warming weather, warming climate?
Well, yes, not so much in the system itself as some of the more shallow lakes in other areas. I mean, certainly a few in the system that were talked about earlier, but in general, what has been studied by our biologists and ecologists here on the refuge has been an overall trend that temperatures are warming, and so that's creating situations where you have more glacial melt in some areas and retreat of glaciers. We have in some of the lowland areas the shallower ponds that are becoming meadows, and some of the meadows that are, you know, having trees sprouting in them and growing in.
And I'm afraid we're running out of time, Candace. Yeah, it's a great topic.
Yeah.
And I want to thank each of my guests. I've enjoyed today's hour. Candace Ward, a park ranger with the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, Max Finch with Alaska Canoe and Campground, and Mike Pelowski, a canoeist. Get out there and join the Swan Lake Canoe Routes. Jeff Bruni was with us earlier to talk about National Public Lands Day at the Campbell Creek Science Center. Next week, our topic is trap shooting. Anchorage has produced some of the best trap shooters in the world, and there's an active community of competitors here. We'll talk about the type flatter of the sport, and also about getting involved at the beginner level. Join us for that next Thursday, and until then, join us on Facebook. What would you like to know about trap shooting? And if you've tried it, what tips can you share? That's all for today. Thanks. I'm Charles Woolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Outdoor Explorer and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.